Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by Ram Trucks. Guts, glory, Ram.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
Well, it's good to see you guys here, that you guys made the final 53, that no longer are your names above your lockers and masking tape. And you know, honestly, you know, Darren Urban, Ron Wolfley, you know, Jim Omohundro, and yours truly, Paul Calvisi, Pauly preseason, we had our question marks. I'll be honest with you. Wolf, the thinking was perhaps you'd lost a step or three.
Pauly, you know what? I've been here for 8 years. The name on the helmet's been off mine for a long, long time. Been to a couple of Pro Bowls.
Well, a little delusional as well, Wolf. I think you know, not quite. I don't think you really ascertained where your job security was in the preseason. There's also that high maintenance factor where sort of the Chad Johnson, you know, TO thing where we thought about moving you. Darren, your cap number obviously was tough. It was tough to manage. We got it done, though. And yeah, so a little
I'm
cap
glad to hear that.
Creative accounting, and you're in.
Interesting, Paul. You still have the tape on your helmet. Oh, I'm sorry. That's your hair.
Well, all you need to look at is the NFL Network Mike Flag, and then call me sir from there. It is Cardinals Underground. We are brought to you by Ram, Guts, Glory, Ram, and we are off. Yes, we are into week one of the regular season, and gentlemen, we just had five preseason games. As we all know, there's zero correlation between a team's win-loss record in the preseason and the regular season. What can we tell? What did we conclude or determine from five preseason games and all those weeks of camp? What do we know here, Darren Urban, with certainty?
John Skelton is your starter quarterback.
And that'll do it for this edition brought to you by Ram, Guts, Glory, Ram.
John Skelton's going to be the starter for the Arizona Cardinals. We also know, I think, that the strength of this team is going to be on the defensive side of the ball.
And it better be.
Also believe that the Arizona Cardinals are going to run the ball. I mean, I think we are going to be a run-first team. Now, you've got to be able to throw it. You always are going to have to throw it. If you're going to play in the National Football League, you better have a passing game. But I think last year the Cardinals ran the ball on first and 10. Classic rundown situation, first and 10. They ran it 47% of the time. I think it's going to be more like 54, 55% of the time this year.
Now, unless you're citing sources, Ron Wolfley, I don't remember the head coach or anyone affiliated on the coaching staff making that proclamation that all of a sudden they're going to, you know, run the ball 55% of the time. I remember him saying more than once, hey, it was nice not to get a lot of pointed questions from the media about the running game or lack thereof. But I also remember him saying, Darren Urban, recently within the last week that, hey, our objective is always to run various types of offenses to try and go ahead and adapt to what the defense has shown us, and that is the ability to go with virtually any formation.
Well, I think where Wolf is coming from, which I would agree with. I mean, look, the way this offense is set up right now, you got some question marks at your tackles and what they're going to be able to do. You have some question marks of how consistent your quarterback can be over the long term. I think running the football makes a lot of sense, especially if you have a defense you can lean on. I think the number one priority of this offense, given where they are right now, is to not turn the ball over and not put them in bad positions. Because I think you feel like your defense can keep you in games. So you just don't want to put your defense in a bad spot to begin with and kind of go from there. And if you're trying not to turn the ball over, I think it would behoove you to throw the ball a little bit less.
See, and that really is a dynamic that changes everything, Pauly, this year for the Cardinals, I think. It is the fact that their defense played so, so incredibly well over the last 9 weeks of last season. You go back 2 years ago where Derek Anderson and Matt Leinart, right, and the problems that the Cardinals had at the quarterback position, you didn't have the defense that you have right now. And that changes everything strategically coming into the games. You couldn't go into the games if you didn't have a good defense that was going to keep you in the game and keep you close early on. Suddenly you couldn't go in there saying, we're going to run the ball, we're going to play it close to the vest, we're going to protect the football, we're going to be more conservative because we think our defense and our special teams are going to be able to control field position and be able to keep us in games. And maybe we win the game and we win a game late, right? I mean, this was the formula for winning games and is the formula, I think, this year. Now, it could all change. There's no doubt about that. But going into the season, I think this is the way you want to do it. But it all starts with having a great defense. If you don't have a good defense that can do that and you can count on, you got to throw the ball whenever you can.
And, of course, the quarterback who was the guy over the second half of last season, minus the Dallas win, was John Skelton. So he's your starter. Ken Whisenant was asked why in various forms by the media, and his only response was, he gives us the best chance to win. Guys, care to speculate? I'm told it was very close. The competition was very close. What do you think made the difference? And I'll answer that to begin with. With the way the offensive line has been shuffled, did it almost necessitate or mandate you take the guy who has those Big Ben qualities in the pocket? Do you think ultimately that may have made the decision that it went beyond the quarterbacks and actually went to the offensive line is the deciding factor?
Well, I will say that, one, I do think it was close. I mean, why else would it go all the way past the last preseason game if it wasn't close? I mean, that makes no sense to me that you wouldn't make a decision if it wasn't close. And I think for those of us, even laypersons out there watching, it seemed close to me. The only
response to that would be the guy you had the investment in, maybe you're giving him every single chance to step up and win the job. That's the only reason you would maybe prolong it if it wasn't close. I guess that would be my only response.
I guess, but to me, if it's not close, that's a moot point anyways. That would be to me. But I think the offensive line perhaps had a role in it and that possibility. I think the pocket presence, regardless of who your offensive line, I think probably plays a role in it. I'm sure they would have liked to see a couple more steps forward from Kevin, from where Kevin Cobb, where he was last year, and they may have not seen that. I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And I do think the wins go into it. I mean, I've made a lot of arguments, and I firmly believe this, that had Kevin Cobb had the kind of defensive performance that John Skelton did down the stretch, I think Kevin Cobb's win-loss record would have been better last year. But that being said, Skelton was behind center for a lot of victories, and I think that also has to be in the equation.
Speaking of equation, a couple of things. First of all, when you talk about going into this season thinking you're going to run the ball more, I think when you've got a suspect offensive line and when anytime you're going to start Bobby Massey at right tackle and you've got DeAnthony Batiste and unproven over at left tackle, I think you can say you worry a little bit about your protection. Anytime you have that combination with a young quarterback, and that's John Skelton, of course, you've got great running backs, great talent at the running back position, and receivers that can get down the field and play action, that equation, so to speak, those variables in the equation add up to try to run the ball and rely on your defense to keep you in games. To answer your question earlier, I think John Skelton, basically, it's just my opinion, I'm total speculation here, but I think he won the job for two primary reasons, and this is a gross oversimplification, but I'm going to say it anyways. I think the pocket presence, number one, as you point out, Paulie, because the offensive line being a little shuffled around and worried about that, why not go with a guy that exudes confidence in the pocket and stands tall in the pocket and has those Big Ben-esque qualities, if you will. And the other thing is Kevin Cobb, three of his interceptions in the preseason, three of the interceptions were bad interceptions.
That's true.
And I keep talking about this. Not all interceptions are created equal in a coach's eye. Never, ever forget that. Three of those interceptions he threw, two against the Tennessee Titans and one against New Orleans in the Hall of Fame game. Bad interceptions that really shake the confidence of not only a quarterback, but also the coaches that are in the room and the players that watch the film, because they all sit there and they wonder what exactly were you looking at? Now, I understand you're going to make mistakes. Human beings are going to continue to make mistakes. And Kevin Cobb, I think still, I would not give up on Kevin Cobb, and we are definitely going to see Kevin Cobb, I believe, this season. Maybe it's due to injury. Maybe it's just John Skelton not playing very well, whatever it may be. There will be an opportunity for Kevin Cobb to come in and play well, and you better hope that he's ready, he's prepared, and he does his job, which I think that he will. But I think John Skelton primarily won the job because of the pocket presence and the fact that Kevin Cobb, three of those picks he threw were really bad. And the one thing you cannot tolerate if you're Ken Whisenhunt this year, and Wiz has been hammering this home, is we can't throw interceptions. We can't turn the ball over. It's a formula that has worked in the National Football League for years. If you've got a strong running game and you've got a strong defense, your quarterback's got to do one thing and one thing only, and that is protect the football. Right, Alex Smith?
How short is the leash, you think, this season, Darren? I mean, how inclined do you think Ken Whisenhunt would be to make a change and go with Kevin Cobb if the offense stalls in a particular game?
I think that's a good question. I think that's a question that a lot of people are asking. If I'm the head coach right now, which I'm not, but if I was, I think that's a fluid situation. I think to sit here before anything's happened and say, well, if we don't win the first two games or this happens or this, some, you know, random number or whatever, I don't believe in that. I think it's got to be a feel thing. And I do think that if you've gone through the entire offseason and the entire training camp trying to figure out who you want to be your starter, and then you finally name somebody, I'm not saying his leash is, okay, he's the starter all season necessarily, but I don't think you can go into it saying, well, if we start 0-2, we might have to make a change. I mean,
it all depends how he plays.
Yeah, and
that's
true.
What it comes back to.
It's going to depend. I think it will depend on how that goes. I mean, if you look at John Skelton's work in a vacuum last year, you know, if you take out the scores, is that a guy that you're going to give a long leash to? I mean, people don't take out the scores, and the wins do mean something. But let's face, I mean, let's look at. I keep coming back.
He had
back
more
to
picks than touchdown passes.
I keep thinking of that first three quarters in Cincinnati, and then what he did in the fourth quarter. The fourth quarter was amazing, and if Earlu Dessett doesn't fall down, not only do they go to overtime, but I firmly believe they win that game. I absolutely have no question in my mind they win that game. And you could have not had more awful quarterback play from a guy than John Skelton had the first three quarters. Not first quarter, not first half, three quarters of that game. His passing rating was like 18-something. I'm surprised they didn't bench him at that point, to be honest. And yet, he came on at the end. I mean, these are the things that you're going to have to decide with John Skelton, the good and the bad.
And he now has a track record of playing very well in the fourth quarter.
Yes,
so
does.
Let's say he sputters in the first, second, maybe even the third quarter. Okay, you're probably not as inclined as he used to be to go ahead and make that change anyway, because you're wondering what's coming in that fourth quarter, because he has been a proven guy who has played very well with a QB rating above 90 in the fourth quarter.
And what was the common denominator of all the slow starts of John Skelton? The common denominator was the fact that defensive coordinators were game planning for John Skelton and coming up with complex coverages and complex pressure packages and complex schemes to try to stop John Skelton from doing his job. Then all of a sudden you're down by 14 or down by 17 points going into the fourth quarter, and you are going to play more soft coverage. You're going to be more conservative in your approach defensively. And that makes sense to me to a certain degree. It's not the prevent defense. It's just more vanilla. You don't want mental errors. You don't want to give up a big play when you don't have to. You want the offense to work for everything that they get. And I think it's one of the reasons why John Skelton had an awful lot of success in the fourth quarter, was because he wasn't facing some of those complex schemes, coverages, and pressure packages.
I'd also say maybe we'll see Kevin Cobb in a no-huddle type package where he'd come in, but Skelton excelled in the no-huddle a year ago as well. It might have been his strongest suit from what we saw out there. All right, so I asked DeAnthony Batiste, your new left starting tackle there, I asked him about, okay, do you have to change the playbook or go about things a little differently since you have some new names and faces up front on the O-line? And he cut me off mid-question, as I guess he should have, and said, no, you can't change the game plan. You can't call it any different with different guys up front. What do we know about the O-line right now? I guess we know the two starting tackles that never started a regular season game at those positions, right?
We know that, yeah. The DeAnthony Batiste is your left tackle and Bobby Massey, the rookie, is your right tackle. And obviously neither, well, obviously Massey hasn't been in the league, but neither one has started a tackle. Batiste did start four games at guard way back in 2007 for Atlanta, I believe. But it's been a long time. And so there's obviously questions there. And you also got, you right now got all four of your backup offensive linemen that could possibly come in at any point. None of them were with this team last year. So I think obviously there's big questions on what's going to happen and how it's going to fill out and how teams are going to attack, you know, a tackle situation that's obviously unproven at best.
So what's realistic, Wolf? I mean, how much do the coaches have to provide help off the edges? How much do you think it does impact game planning? You know, I mean, forget about who's up there. Just the fact they're new and they haven't had a chance to build chemistry, that's a challenge.
Yeah, it definitely is going to impact game planning, in my opinion. I think we're going to see a lot of two-back. Now, don't get me wrong. I think we're going to see a lot of two-back because the Arizona Cardinals operate very well out of a two-back scheme with a fullback, Anthony Sherman. Sometimes it's 12 personnel. Well, they'd bring Jimmy Dre in. And Jim Dre is a guy that, you know, as a tight end, he also can be that slash H-back type of guy. And they've used him to lead up and on running plays. I think you're definitely going to use a lot of 12 personnel with two tight ends and one back and probably a lot of regular with two running backs in there. And the reason why I like regular in particular is the fact you can get in that offset eye and you've got help for either tackle on either side if you're going to run some play action as well out of that. There's a lot of things you can do to try to help tackles, such as putting a tight end to their side and having that tight end run through the defensive end on a pass play, chip the defensive end. There you can go gap protection, especially out of two back, where you have a five-man slide down into the gap and the two backs seal. They block the two guys seal off of that slide, that gap protection down. I mean, there are things you can do to help, and there are things you can do to mitigate the pressure that these tackles are under. But at some time in this game, you're going to have to depend on them holding up one-on-one. You cannot help them every play. It's impossible. You can't do it.
And this Seattle defense over the second half of last season sort of mirrored the rise of the Cardinals defense, did it not?
Absolutely, it did. And it's a very talented defense, and they've got a nice secondary. And they're in a lot of ways a mirror image of this team. When you're talking about a team that's going to want to rely on its defense, that's going to want to rely on its run game, that has a quarterback that's unproven, and it'll be very interesting. But you know that defense was in regular form by the end of last season, and the Cardinals were able to do some things against it in that last game of the year. And if they hadn't made a couple of mistakes late on their own. I don't even think that game goes to overtime. So, I mean, to me, this is a winnable game, especially going against the rookie quarterback.
The defense, I think, for the Seattle Seahawks, the one area they really, really outperformed the Arizona Cardinals defense in last season was takeaways, just coming up with all sorts of takeaways. They had 22 interceptions on the season as opposed to the Arizona Cardinals' 10. That's, obviously, it's more than double. That is a big part of what the Seattle Seahawks did and were able to do last year, takeaways. It's the one area Ray Horton is really looking for improvement out of his defense this year.
What do we think about the Ray Horton defense this year? I mean, is it going to be a case where it looks very similar to the end of last season, or is it even above and beyond, Wolf? I mean, how complex is complex? And talking to some of the guys, they say, yeah, Darrell Washington figures to be, you know, the X factor, right? He'll do anything on any snap. He could be in the backfield. He could be covering the deep half. I mean, I guess if nothing else, I'm going to keep my eyes on number 58 this season. I think that'll be entertaining.
I agree with you. I think they're going to move Darrell Washington all over the field, but I don't think he's going to be alone. I think we're going to see a lot of X-Men. This is what I've been calling this defense right now, the X-Men defense, because I think Ray Horton is going to move Patrick Peterson, for example, all over the place. Patrick Peterson being a force. Try to put him in position to make plays, be it a sack, maybe rolling off the slot, or maybe a guy that he's trying to trap a quarterback in throwing a pick. He'll have him line up and be the guy that will try to trap that quarterback. You know, there are things you can do to use a great talent, and I think they're going to use Patrick Peterson that way. But it's not only Darrell Washington, it's also the entire front. We've already seen it, glimpses of it in preseason. The muddle puddle is what I call it, where you've got seven guys and they're standing around the offensive line and they're all moving. You have no idea who's going to blitz, who is not going to blitz. This is what we're going to see, a very fluid, very flexible, dare I say, gambling type defense from Ray Horton.
How similar do you think the challenge is to playing Cam Newton a year ago, that athletic rookie quarterback now with Russell Wilson?
Well, I think it's very similar in terms of the athleticism. I mean, obviously, Russell Wilson, in terms of stature, is nowhere close to Cam Newton, and I think that's a big deal. I mean, I think if you can get your hands on Russell Wilson, it's going to be a lot easier to bring him down than it was Cam Newton. But let's face it, we went into last year and thinking Cam Newton, okay, this is nice start for the Cardinals. This is going to be good. And then he ripped them up through the air mostly, and because this defense had no clue what it was doing, no clue. And we thought at the time they were having some issues, and we now know with the benefit of hindsight and the benefit of the guys willing to talk about it more now that it was really not a good situation. And that's one of the reasons that rookie. And so they're in such a much better place. And Ray Horton has talked this offseason about how much more he wants to be able to do with this defense. And I think some of the fits and starts that this defense had the first couple preseason games, I think helped them, because I think there was this thought that both from players and coaches that we've arrived in different ways, obviously maybe when overconfidence with the players and with the coaches, hey, we'll put so much on the plate. And they were able to kind of take a step back and say, well, wait a minute, let's not go overboard here. I think they're in a much better place for this first game. I do think, again, you know, whatever Russell Wilson has been able to do in the preseason, and he's done some nice things, he's still a third-round pick. He's still 5'11". He's not the number one overall pick. He's not the talent Cam Newton is. He might turn into be a very solid NFL quarterback, but I think it's a different situation than facing a Cam Newton last year or Sam Bradford the year before. And I think the Cardinals obviously need to focus on stopping that run game for the Seahawks and force Russell Wilson to beat him. And I think, especially with the Cardinals playing at home, I think that puts the Cardinals in a very good place.
Yeah, I think you can look at what the Seattle Seahawks did last year and carry that philosophy that they had offensively over to this year, because you've got Russell Wilson. Yes, he's a rookie quarterback, but he is well beyond his years. Pete Carroll continues to talk about Russell Wilson and the maturity of Russell Wilson. I think this is a team that ran the ball on first and 10. Just bear with me here for a moment. First and 10, they ran the ball 48% of the time, the Seattle Seahawks. Now, I will promise you, they used a ton of play action as well. And when you talk about a run-first team, they're usually 56, 57, even 58%. As a matter of fact, when the Pittsburgh Steelers went to the Super Bowl with Ken Wisenhunt as their offensive coordinator, they ran the ball that year 58% of the time on first and 10. That is a run-first team. Well, the Seattle Seahawks are a run-first team, but on first down, they'll use a lot more play action, and I think you'll see that with Russell Wilson having a Marshawn Lynch. Now, we don't know whether or not he's going to play, but I believe he will be there, and I believe
he will too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to play. It's second down that really is telling about the Seattle Seahawks. Second and 1-6 is classic rundown situation for any football team. It defines what your offense is all about. First and 10, second and 1-6, classic rundown situations in the NFL. What do you choose to do? The Seattle Seahawks last year in second and 1-6 ran the ball 79% of the time. This is a run first, use play action offense, and we're going to see that with Russell Wilson as their cue. The defense's charge is going to be stopping Russell Wilson, his ability to scramble out of the pocket, and not only that, the quick little three-step drop game, because he's 5'11", Seattle is a West Coast game. Darrell Bevell is their offensive coordinator, loves the West Coast, he's a West Coast disciple, the ball is coming out quickly, get your hands up, Calais Campbell with the Inspector Gadget arms.
There was an amazing stat last year in the college game. Ryan Tannehill at 6'4" had 17 balls batted at the line, and Russell Wilson, as the quarterback of Wisconsin, had 4. all season. Now you could break those all down, and you know, based on the offense and the number of passing attempts, etc. But I tell you, the kid passes the eyeball test. If you watched him in the preseason at all, and I had a chance to watch some of the replays on NFL Network, not just because I'm holding their mic flag right now, and I mean, he looked good. He looked decisive. Even the post-game interview was impressive. He was very mature about it. I mean, to be first-team All-ACC and then the next year first-team All-Big Ten, I'm curious to see that.
Having said that, though, Paulie, he is setting a precedent. If Russell Wilson goes out and plays well and develops into a great quarterback in the NFL, make no mistake about it, he'll be setting a precedent for being under 6 feet tall, truly under 6 feet tall, and being able to play quarterback in the NFL. Right now, there's a guy who's 6 feet tall in the NFL. His name is Drew Brees. How many of those guys do you see in the NFL? You see one, Drew Brees. So, again, although I agree with you, Russell Wilson is doing something unprecedented if he succeeds and does well.
That's why I find it intriguing. That's all. I just find it intriguing. It just, and especially in game one of his pro career against defensive schemes and complexities he's never seen before, because you're never going to see that in the preseason. That's why I think it's just a great storyline.
Agreed.
The other challenge for me to the Cardinals defense is, okay, you know, if you're a little unsure about some of your tackling at times in the preseason, you better figure it out quick, because if there's one guy who's going to break arm tackles in the NFL, right, and get into beast mode, it's Marshawn Lynch. So that's going to be a big challenge to me.
Look, I think everybody's going to talk about the offensive line and John Skelton and everything. I think the spotlight is absolutely on the defense in this first game. I think because of how this team is built, I think because of who they're going against, I think because of how this defense played in the opener last year, I think because of all of that.
Because they're at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything this first game is about the defense. I mean, I really do, because that's the side of the ball that has to trend upward significantly for this team to make hay this year. That's what I believe.
Where do you think, last question, where do you think Seattle attacks the Cardinals defense? Would you care to hazard a guess? What do you think when on Sunday, game day, where do you think the Seahawks come out and go at this Cardinals defense?
I think the Seattle Seahawks believe they can run the football against this defense. The Arizona Cardinals right in the middle of the pack, anywhere from 15 to 21 in the major rushing categories. Okay, average yards per carry, average yards per game allowed, things of that nature. Okay, right about in the middle to getting close to being near the bottom third, I would say, in the league. I think the Seattle Seahawks believe they can run the football. And because of that, I think we're going to see them run the football, because that's what they do. That's who they are. Anytime you can take what you do and who you are and what you feel good about and apply it against a defense and attack a defense that you think really doesn't match up well to your strengths, believe me, you're going to do that. And they're going to use a lot of play action as well. I think that's how they attack this defense.
All right, so if you want more of Darren Urban behind the mic this season, bringing the pregame knowledge on the Cardinals Radio Network, is that correct, Darren? You're back in the saddle this year?
I am. That is correct.
That's correct. Yours truly, pregame. I'll be on the sideline. Wolf, game day in the booth, calling it with
absolutely
Dave
Pasch. Game day in the booth, and I'm going to be looking for one thing. I know you're wrapping this up, Paulie, but I have to say this offensively for the Arizona Cardinals. Look for play action. Look for the matchup of play action against Seattle. Anytime you get an eight-man front, I think the Cardinals are going to run the ball. I think they're going to come out, and they're going to try to run the ball, and I think Seattle's going to bring that safety down. They're going to get an eight-man front. Play action is going to be critical. When you get those eight-man fronts, what do you do to burn that defense off of play action? You're only going to get a few opportunities in the game to make them pay for playing an eight-man front. That is going to be the charge to John Skelton and to this offense, to be able to get the ball down the field on dig routes to Larry Fitzgerald. That's the deep in route, a deep post route, corner routes, fade routes, go routes, getting the ball down the field off of play action. That will take them out of their eight-man front and allow the Cardinals to maybe run the ball more effectively. That is going to be the matchup, but John Skelton is only going to get a few of those opportunities. You've got to make them pay. And if not, it's an easy defense to call against the Cardinals. Stack the box. Don't let Beanie beat you. Don't let Ryan Williams beat you. Make John Skelton beat you.
Because what's the golden rule? If Fitz is single covered, he's open. Throw him the ball. And if they are devoting extra attention to Fitz and trying to load the
box,
which they will,
even jamming up the box, which means Michael Floyd.
Yeah. Rob Housler
off early
Doucette. Andre Roberts underneath, you know, some of these other guys. Absolutely agreed. You know, John Skelton's ability to find some of these other guys.
Yes.
In the face.
I'm sorry, Paulie. I know you're rapping.
Yeah. Well, I was getting to Dave Pasch, by the way. He will be obviously calling the game back at it after his one-game stint as a replacement referee. You know, it's legendary. You know, he's renowned for his mastery of the rule book. He gave it a shot, but he'll be back in the – oh, is that not – I just assumed Dave Pasch last week was on the sideline as an unofficial official. That's not correct, Wolf?
No, I get where you're going with this, Paul. You did a great job, by the way. ABC 50.
Were you exhausted at the end of that broadcast, by the way? Because I said, you know, I put you to work, Wolf. I mean, honestly, I felt exhausted. Bad afterwards. You were exhausted.
I was exhausted before it started.
I see. Hopefully that had nothing to do with me. For Ron Wolfley, Darren Urban, Jim Omohundro, I'm Paul Calvisi. Cardinals Underground brought to you by Ram, Guts, Glory, Ram on EasyCardinals.com.